accession number 22344, reel 3.
Major Grace, reel 3. I think you were saying you learned about where you were going once you'd left Liverpool on your troop ship.
Yes. And, oh yes, once... sorry, will you switch it up? It was just after we sailed that we were given the information that we're going round the north of Ireland to join up with a big naval convoy and going to Algiers. So now we knew where we were going. And, of course, we had to be prepared for attack from the air and submarines and all the rest of it. But it was a very calm voyage, as it happened. We managed to elude any Germans, and we arrived safely in Algiers. But sadly, this beautiful ship, which was a luxury liner before it was converted, was sunk on the return to England. And also, there were two other vehicles that were lost from torpedo attacks. And when we arrived, or we didn't know it at the time, the convoy had lost a number of very vital ships containing all our hardware. So we lost guns and tanks and all, and vehicles. And so we were very hamstrung without them to start with.
What about your own battalion, the 6th Gordons? Did they have their weapons and equipment with them?
Yes, all the weapons were
so
with
us. So your battalion was all right?
Quite all right, yes. Everything was in our ship. It was only the divisional hardware that was lost.
The larger items.
That's right.
What happened when you got to Algiers then? What do you remember your first impressions of the place?
Well, we stayed there a couple of nights, and I remember I had to defend some poor jock for gross drunkenness. So that was my first example of being a defending officer in a court-martial.
What were the facts in that case?
Oh, just that he hadn't realised how potent the Algerian wine was, and he just unwisely imbibed too much and more or less went berserk as a result. I think he'd fired off a rifle. Fortunately, I don't think any damage was done, but obviously it was not the sort of thing that a jock should do. And so he was court-martialed. I think he was obviously found guilty and can't remember what his punishment was.
Sounds as though you would have been limited to putting in a plea in mitigation.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, there's nothing. No great shakes for the defending officer.
Was he a... from your platoon or company?
No, he was from a different regiment altogether. They certainly made sure that the officers for and against were in a different regiment. Oh, yes.
Where were you staying during that first couple of nights in Algiers? Were you in the city or were you...
More or less in the city, in digs all over the place. Mm. But we didn't, as I say, I think it was only 2 days we were there. And then we got in a train and we went all across North Africa, past the Atlas Mountains, until we got to a little place called Sidi Moussa, which was not far from Medjez El Bab.
What did you think of North Africa on first acquaintance with it? Was it so?
Well, it was amazing. It was hot and dry, and the Arabs were strange. We had no contact with them at first, but they were there, of course, especially in the little village of Sidi Moussa. But they were, at that stage, they weren't particularly impoverished, but later on we saw some of the really desperately poor Arabs living in hovels in some desert-like place. More of that later.
What about the local French population? Did you have any contact
no
with them?
No contact at all. Not at all.
You mentioned you were on a train. What sort of train was it?
It was a long train with just hard wooden seats. for the, I think the officers had hard wooden seats, and I think probably the men were, didn't even have that. The old cattle trucks that we've heard of in the First War.
40 men or 8 horses.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
But when you got to Sidi Moussa, what sort of place was that? You mentioned it was a village.
It was a little village, not too impoverished, but they're doing very well for oranges and figs and things. So I think they're pretty, well, not well off, but they weren't starving. Mm. We didn't have much contact with them, but we were only there a short time. We did the, of course, having spent, what was about 7 days on the voyage, we had to get toughened up a bit after that, so we did lots of marching. And well, when we first arrived at the station where we were let out of the train, we had a very long march before we got there. I think it was about a 12-hour march. It was a long way from the station, so we were pretty exhausted carrying our weapons and everything.
Had you been given any instruction about the survival skills necessary for the theatre when you were going down on the ship? They given you any particular advice about water discipline and hygiene?
Oh yes, that's right. Yes, we were, and we had to take Mepocrine tablets. And yes, we were given quite a bit of instruction from the health point of view and what to avoid and the dangers of this and that. Yes.
What sort of hazards were you advice to avoid?
Mosquitoes, insects, scorpions, that sort of thing. Mm. And of course, very, very careful not to drink any water that wasn't the battalion water. Mm. All right to eat oranges and things, but be careful not to eat anything given by the Arabs which were not in a skin, so that you could peel it off and it'd be all right. But don't eat anything unwashed from the Arabs. That sort of advice.
But not against the red wine.
Well, I suppose that was a basic danger hazard, yes.
Do you know how long you were at Sidi Moussa before you...
I think only probably about 5 to 6 days, I think, if I remember rightly.
What was the ground like there? Was that mountainous or was
no, it flat? Flat, surrounded by fig trees and olives and oranges. Lots of oranges growing on the trees.
Were you living under canvas there or were you in hard cover?
We were in hard cover. I was in a sort of cement laundry, I think it was. So it was all right. Yes, we were undercover then. That was about the last time we were undercover for a year or so.
Mm. What happened after you left Sidi Moussa?
Then we went on in trucks after that until we got to...
were these your own trucks or were they an RASC company?
I think it must have been the RASC. We wouldn't have had enough without them.
So you're a troop-carrying company.
And then we went up into the hills before Medjez El Bab and overlooking the Gubalat Plain. Mm. And each platoon was given its own mountain. I could call them mountains. They were really just sort of quite high hills, and then way in that over there there's this vast Gubalat plain, and the very word Gubalat was ominous itself, because the Germans were supposed to be sending out very strong fighting patrols every night across the Gubalat plain until you attacked whichever mountain they decided to attack.
What did your jocks think about this sort of countryside?
I think they were pretty grim, because the weather hadn't quite warmed up yet, and it was very The mountain itself was bleak, covered with shrubs, quite aromatic shrubs of some kind, a lot of rock.
Was this a sort of Jebel that you were on?
Yes,
a
Jebel.
Jebel
Jaffa.
Jebel Jaffa.
Yes. J A double F A, I think it was.
How many of you were on the Jebel? Was it just a platoon post?
Jebel Jaffa was a small one, just our platoon alone. There were one or two other small Jebels dotted around. Each had its own platoon on.
Where did you go? Did you go right to the top of it?
Yes, right to the top. And we took over from the East Surrey Regiment, and they had already dug the necessary slit trenches. Mm. So we went on the reverse slope.
Yes.
So we were to some extent protected from the shell fire.
Was there a lot of shell fire?
Quite a bit. It was not intense, but it was regular.
Do you know what sort of calibers of shell fire the Germans were?
88 millimetre was the sort of standard weapon against us, I think. And we had a 25 pounder.
You had 25 pounds in support then?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Was this the first time you'd come under fire as such?
Yes, yes it was. Mm. And the fire in this case was a shell fire.
What was it like? What sort of effect did it have on you coming under fire for the first time?
It was rather shocking. In fact, the first intimation I had was we heard shells landing on one of the hills very near us, and shouts were, "Help, help!" And then we couldn't do anything because, of course, we were separated. But it was a very, very terrifying, chilling sound to hear. First the shell landing and then this cry for help. It really upset us.
How far away were the next?
I think about a quarter of a mile away.
And they were also on a...
On another little bump like this, a Jebel, yes.
What, was there anything in between the two Jebels?
Just a sort of valley, rough, uninhabited valley.
But were there any troops down in the
valleys? No.
So you were just holding the high ground?
Yes,
then.
That's right. The head excuse me, battalion headquarters was down.
Yes.
But each platoon was up on the top.
So it sounds like you were really picketing the high ground,
that's
overlooking
right.
the plain.
Yeah, that's right.
You said you were on the reverse slope. Now, presumably this would make it very difficult for an 88 millimetre to hit you because they had a fairly flat trajectory, didn't
Except
they?
Sorry. The trouble was the direction, because we were surrounded, you might say, almost all round by German positions, you couldn't say that is the line over there, because it was here and there and there, and so you couldn't tell quite where, from what direction the shell fire was going to come from.
So were you intermingled then
with
the German positions?
Sounds very, to some extent.
Very messy.
Very messy.
What were your orders? Were you simply to sit in your positions and hold the ground, or were you required
to do up anything? To a point, but my first duty, which was the very first night we got there, was to go on a recce with three men down into Gubilat Plain and see what if there were any sign of any German patrols. But with only three men, of course, we weren't expected to fight.
It was a purely reconnaissance patrol then.
That was the idea, but on the other hand, when I meant Colonel Perry, he gave me my briefing, of course, said, if you like to come back, bring back a prisoner, you'd be very welcome. But don't go out of your way and get killed, because we'd much prefer you to come back with your information. That's what you're really going for. And anyway, that first... Now, I was expected to go 7 miles to a farmhouse right over there, the other side of Gubilak Plain.
During the night?
In the dark.
In the dark.
Oh, yes.
Yes. That's a very long way to go on a patrol.
It was a very long way, and so I had to spend a whole day. Oh, well, of course, I said the first night. It must have been the first day. I spent memorising the route, because, of course, you couldn't look at a map when you were actually going it. So I had to memorise all the route, all the way, and all the way back to make quite sure that I could get there and back, not lose my way. But do you want to hear about this?
Yes, I do, very much.
Well, I had one lance corporal and two men, and I just, they had a rifle each, and I just had a pistol. But it was just, and then we started off, and...
What time did you start off?
Directly after sunset. And by the time we actually got down our Jebel and onto the plain, by that time it had got dark. It was starlight, but no moon. And we set off, and our boots made an awful noise because we were walking through African marigolds all the time. So it went scrunch, scrunch, scrunch all the way. And so every now and then we stopped to listen. And after about an hour, when I listened, I heard a very faint scrunch, scrunch in the distance. And that was gradually getting nearer and nearer. And so we sank down into our marigolds, hid. And sure enough, he was getting louder and louder, coming right towards us. And then as we were down, we could see against the sky, there was quite a large German patrol coming towards us. I think it must have been, as we were warned, roughly about 50 men. So they would have been a marvellous opportunity to ambush, but 3 against 50 was just not on. So I carried out my orders and just remained. And fortunately, just almost at the last moment, they altered their approach slightly, just 2 or 3 degrees, and they marched just past us.
They didn't spot you?
They didn't spot me, us, no. And I weighed up, now, what is my duty? Shall I go on, get the remaining 6 miles, or should I go back and warn that this troop, that this patrol is on the march and going to attack you? And I decided it's more important to give the warning. And so after they were, I just whispered to the men, we better go back. And so I did a circling movement, and I got back to our own troops to warn them that they're about to arrive. And so they were ready waiting. And fortunately, as it turned out, the colonel agreed that I had made the right decision. And so they had a warm reception.
What did they actually do, the Germans, when they arrived?
Well, they were going to lay mines, as it turned out, at the foot of our mountain. And so the fact that they were intercepted by a company, AA company, attacked them, because by the time, fortunately, the colonel just had time to give the warning, give the A company commander, go down and be prepared to fight against these, give them an ambush, which they did. And so that was the first of my patrols.
What was the result of the ambush?
The ambush was that both sides suffered casualties, but I could say the winning side was fortunately A company. And they inflicted much more damage on the Germans than they did on us.
Did they manage to take any prisoners during the ambush?
Not that one, no. But on another one, another occasion, I was doing much the same thing. And this was a few nights later. And I had with me Corporal Tripney, who was a very good chap, and we came upon, we heard, it started from the ear rather than the eye, and we heard pick, 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 and then we realised that they were pickaxes or spades or something. It sounded as if they were laying mines. As it turned out, that's just what they were doing. And so we crept up nearer, and then we saw one German sentry just standing there keeping guard, and fortunately he was facing away from us, and so Corporal Tripney crept up, and with his unarmed combat training, he got an arm round the chap's throat, almost stifled him and dragged him back. And because of the pressure on his throat, he was almost choked. But at least it meant, of course, that he couldn't cry out. So we tied him up, we tied his arms up and dragged him back, and he was our first prisoner.
Did you manage to find out anything about him?
No, well, not personally. Well, he did say, we talked a bit, he spoke a bit of English, and he said, actually, it's all that recounted there. He said, I speak English very good, and I am in England since 5 years. And it turned out he'd been doing docker's work in Liverpool. And so he was quite pleased. He thought, oh, I'm going to have an easy war now. So, of course, we don't know how much he gave to the intelligence, because naturally we handed him over, and it's the last we ever heard of him.
How far out from your own positions was this mining party when you found them on that patrol?
Oh, that particular one, I think about 3 miles from the from our Djebel.
Again, that's a long way away.
It was, yes. Mm. It took virtually the whole of the night by the time we got there and nabbed him and got back.
When you were choosing men to go on a patrol, what qualities did you look for?
Well, in the first place, I asked for volunteers, but I always got nearly all the platoon volunteered. What did I look for? Someone who was good on the ground, reliable, friendly with me, so I could... I was obviously on very... You must be on good terms with this chap, so he would fit in. You wouldn't need to be told much. He would just know what to do.
Automatically.
Yeah. And they were all good men.
Did you find that you tended to take the same men with you when you went on?
No. Change. Mm. Yes, it'd be better to have different men. Mm. Yes. Give them all a chance, so to speak.
How frequently did you go out at night?
Well, I changed. Of course, I alternated with other officers from different platoons. I think at that stage about one every 4 nights.
That's quite a lot of patrolling.
In fact, at that stage, I seemed to be doing more patrolling than anything else. Mm. It was hazardous sort of business, and it was a very nerve-wracking few hours you had to spend beforehand. I mentioned learning the route on the map, but all other kind of preparations you had to make, and it was very nerve-wracking, as it must be, say, for the RAF going out on a bombing raid or whatever. But once you start, once you're on your feet and you're going, it was all right. It was the suspense before you started that was nerve-wracking.
So it's the apprehension.
Apprehension. Mm-hmm.
Did you have any other close encounters with the enemy out in...
Not in Africa. Yeah. Oh, yes, well, I did. But not in the way... The next time, we moved on from this Djebel, and we were going towards making an attack on Banana Ridge. Mm. Yes, this is some little time later now.
Ah, well, if we could just say a bit more about when you were on that first position.
Well, one was interesting. I was sent down to look at some Wog huts, because apparently the colonel had been told that the Germans are making use of these old Wog huts for, I don't know, for some reason. And so I had to go and inspect them, see if there were any. And these were the ones who were really terribly impoverished that I've mentioned before. And I went down to one Wog hut, and it was literally just a sort of mud hovel with straw inside. And there was a man came running, "No, don't shoot," or whatever he said. And "Egg, egg, egg." He tried to bribe us off with eggs so that we wouldn't shoot his children. And there were no Germans there, but what there were, when we came out from looking inside, we saw that all of the lower part of our battle dress trousers were covered in black, a swarm of fleas, absolutely dreadful. So we were attacked by these fleas, but not the Germans. So we had to more or less burn our trousers and suffer the result of being bitten all over. It was horrible. So how the Wogs managed to live in those circumstances, heaven knows. He had a goat and a few chickens, and that's all. I suppose he got some milk from the goat, I don't know.
When you were on your gerbil, after the first, you got in there and you said you were in trenches that the Surreys had dug, did you have a sort of daily routine?
Yes, at night we had to go down and fetch our water. It was an awful bind having to carry water, which is remarkably heavy. Enough for a whole platoon, and our rations, of course. But otherwise, it was just a case of sitting there, avoiding the odd shell fire. Fortunately, I don't think we suffered at all, apart from that first one I've mentioned on the next door hill. We didn't really suffer an awful lot from this shelling. It was just more of a nuisance than anything else.
What did you do in the daytime? You did your resupply run during the dark hours of darkness.
Yes.
Any patrols during the dark?
No, all the patrols were done at night, so I can't remember quite. I don't think we did anything very much. We just sort of existed.
Were you able to get enough sleep at this stage while you were holding the ground?
Not enough. I think we could do a bit of sleeping during the day, in turns, of course. But probably we could have done with much more sleep if we had the opportunity, yes.
The Germans didn't make any formal attacks on the positions?
No, apart from that one that we fortunately avoided, we didn't get attacked, no. Until, as I say, what we're coming on to now is
going
to Banana Ridge, and we were given what you might call the night off.
Yes.
Because we obviously were in for a big thing the next day, so we were allowed, with suitable sentries, of course, to have a night's sleep. But we just about got to sleep when a message came immediately, "Ted, see Major Bridgen at once." And it turned out there's a flap on. "Take your platoon down the road because there's a German patrol said to be coming." And so I went down a bit, put my platoon in position. It was dark, of course. And sure enough, there was a big fighting patrol, the Germans, coming towards us. And when they were near enough, I gave the order to fire, and so they all went to ground, but they fired at us, and then I suffered my first casualty. There was a man shot straight through the throat, and he was Private Parker, who'd been with me on one of my patrols. In fact, he was the one who helped carry the German back that we'd captured, so I was very sorry to lose him. But we had a bit of a battle, and after